This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by the Frog Pants Patreon at patreon.com/frogpants. Imagine like a dollar a month for all this content. Not just Film Sack, but everything, man. Amazing. It's that cheap. Consider supporting us at patreon.com/frogpants.
Symbols are a language that can help us understand our past. As the saying goes, a picture says 1,000 words. But which words? Interpret for me, please, this symbol, first thing that comes to mind, anybody.
Hatred, racism,
Ku Klux Klan.
Yes, yes, interesting. But they would disagree with you in Spain.
Cripple, put the keystone on the table. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, one and all, and welcome back to Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson. This is episode 292, and I'm joined today by Brian. He's really afraid of elevators, Dunaway.
Oh, I am. Hey, quick question before I start my greeting. What do they call those hot dog wiener roasters at the 7-Eleven? You know, the ones that roll meat tubes on them, kind of like a Frankfurter treadmill.
Yeah, all day long. You know,
it keeps them hot for the consumption of consumers, but they get all sweaty and blistered and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. What do they call those?
I think it's just a hot dog warmer.
Hot dog warmer?
Roller, okay. Maybe? A roller? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I just always thought those things needed a name because I always go with the kids and I'm like, hey, give me a hot dog off that thing. So it needs a name. I'm sure it has one. Okay. So my fan theory is this.
Okay.
Robert and Sophie missed the biggest clue of all while trying to detangle those anagrams Sophie's really overly dramatic dead grandpa left. They totally overlooked the way he was roasting his wiener with that heat lamp in his flayed man death pose. He was obviously trying to lead them down to the French 7-Eleven around the corner from the Louvre, where he left another anagram and ketchup before he came back on the hot dog rolling wiener grill thing. And I said something like, teach cod divine.
Wow.
Right. Good job. It's a good anagram. Right.
You know what? That is, it's weird, eerily similar to the plot of the film. I'm really impressed.
Yeah.
Where you took that.
I felt like a roasted wiener all blistered and sweaty.
Yeah, by the end of this thing.
Yeah, it looked like he had like a 50-watt light bulb shoved in his crotch.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It was obviously to mask blow
nudity.
Out his,
sure.
Yeah, the old man wiener. We didn't want to see that. See enough of that at gym. But
it's funny. I made specific note about how movies get real creative about how they obscure male nudity in movies. I think it's kind of a hoot. We'll get to that in a minute. But before that, also with us, Randy, nothing like hanging around your naked grandpa for an extended period of time, Jordan.
Yeah. Aloha, Scott. Brian. Ryan. I'm just going to be doing some little magic tricks here while we record, because nothing says deeper reality of knowledge quite like sleight of hand stuff. Oh, what's this in my pocket? It was what you and the rest of the world were looking for the last 20 centuries. No big deal. You know, the word womb is funny.
Womb.
I agree. I like the word womb. Finally with us, Brian, CSI France Ibbot.
Aloha. This week I watched a film starring a beloved American actor with bad hair, joined by a woman with a questionable accent, as they infiltrate museums and holy places to follow in the footsteps of Leonardo da Vinci and uncover a deeper conspiracy in the Catholic Church. I loved this film a lot. And then when I was done watching Hudson Hawk, I watched a piece of crap called The Da Vinci Code.
I thought you were going to say National Treasure.
Well,
also,
they're
in, no kidding. With also, with bad hair, yeah.
And those movies, really those National Treasure movies are tonally very much like this. Like they're all
very much, but they're a lot more fun.
Oh, for
do you
sure.
Think, but do you, but I this so. Is a topic I want to talk about. Do you think National Treasure was the answer to what everybody said about the Da Vinci Code, which was like, yeah, that was good and all, but God, unless you're a freaking history major on the Catholic Church, I mean, a lot of this stuff feels like inside baseball.
Maybe. Well,
or unless you're completely unfamiliar with
right?
Maybe, religion, yeah.
Maybe. The thing I came away from, okay, so I read the book and didn't see the movie. So 2004, whatever it was, I read the book. And I found it, you know, throwaway entertaining. It's kind of fun to read, right. But it's kind of simple,
literally,
too. And it's not, you know, like I remember all this controversy about it and everybody was up in arms. I'm just like, it's kind of a pulpy, stupid book. Like, I don't know why everyone's getting so worked up. It's okay. Like, I enjoyed the read through, but it's not like this is, I'm not calling this high literature by any stretch. And nor am I a judge of that. So, you know, it just kind of came and went. Then the movie comes out a couple years later, 2006. Which, by the way, I'm pretty sure Tom Hanks had, there's got to be a year between 2006 and 2016, like a specific year where he went from Tom Hanks, Tom Hanks, Tom Hanks, old Tom Hanks, old Tom Hanks,
yes.
Old Tom Hanks.
Yes.
Because he's still looking real spry and young here. I don't know when that was. I don't know when to pinpoint it.
So between Da Vinci and I'm the Captain Now.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Captain Phillips or whatever.
Yeah.
Phillips or straight.
Look at me.
Anyway, so what's my point with that? My point is that that weirded me out. And his hair
it was
weird.
Like
it's a quick transformation for somebody who is in the public eye so much.
Yeah,
is what
right.
You're saying.
Yeah, it's like the Dick Clark thing where he looks young for a long time and then all of a sudden, boom.
Suddenly
he had previously been making these big movies like this every year, and then suddenly he became like an executive producer on TV series like The Pacific and Big Love. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what finally aged him out.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he was doing it since, like, he was, the Band of Brothers was his gig back in 2000. So he'd kind of dabbled in that stuff. And then, you're right, though, like, moving forward, like, that entire CNN series that's on Netflix right now, the 60s, 60s and 70s thing.
70s.
I don't think they've done the 80s, have they? I hope they have.
They're like on episode 6 of the.
Oh,
of the
I gotta watch that. Those are really, really good. And little did I know, maybe partly why they're good is because Tom Hanks has a knack for these things, and he's all up in that too. But
love
anyway,
his space stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff. He's really like his production side is awesome. Like really great, cool. Like feels like important things. None of it feels like just like trash or whatever. It feels like stuff that matters. But here,
how many Toy Story movies did he do between those? I guess only Toy Story 3, right? That was the only one after 2006. So it's not like he was just out of the public eye. He did that, Incredibly Loud and Uncomfortably Close or whatever it was. That was World Trade Center, movie.
Oh, but I don't remember that.
It really seems to me like he was making movies all through the early 2000s. I think Scott's onto something, and he was gaining weight. Like he starts out the century at the skinniest he's ever been in his life doing Castaway. Mm-hmm. And then every movie he, can you believe it's been 16 years since Castaway?
Yeah. No way.
That's
really
weird. Oh, yeah. I think about his tooth getting knocked out by a skate every day.
that's a movie that holds up. I think really well.
Look at this. He's in the middle of producing for 2018. He is executive producing the Lewis and Clark TV miniseries. That'll probably be amazing. But he's got this penchant for like history and stuff, and I
want to argue with Brian. There's a Castaway is kind of a slog. It's kind of a we stood around and shot scenes of a beach movie.
I like that
goes on and on forever.
The only parts of that movie I don't like. Well, maybe I'm supposed to not like them. I don't like how it ends. Let me take that back. I like how he's back. His tooth is missing. He's skinny. He's at the party, and there's so much food. It's ridiculous.
That tooth scene really bothered you.
Oh, my gosh, dude. It still haunts
like
me.
It's like the eighth thing I would think of when I think of that movie.
And that's we have discovered about Scott. If Film Sack has done nothing else for the world, we have discovered that Scott can capture a moment of body trauma from any movie, and that's what the movie's about.
Yeah, right. No, right. You're not wrong. Yeah. It's totally tribal. I'll cop to that. No problem.
I am really not looking forward to talking about Paul Bettany's self-flagellation in a minute.
Oh, that was so bad.
Well, I have a... You know, it's funny. That has less of an impact on me for some reason, and I think I have a theory as to why, but we'll get to that in a second. But to this whole point of that movie and how it ended, he goes to the big FedEx welcome home party, and there's all that food, and that's a great... sort of like contrast, like, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. Look how much food everyone left at this party. and I couldn't kill, you know, one disgusting crab and eat it raw on the freaking plate. You know, like the contrast really well done. All that stuff's great until he goes to talk to Helen Hunt, who's now married and has kids. Mm-hmm. They should have ended it when he decided to leave her life. Instead, she comes rushing outside in the rain and gives him a big fat kiss, and they're like reliving it for a second. And for whatever reason, ruins the movie for me. I don't know what it was.
It's like that moment, you know, she's like, oh my God, I could totally just fall back into this thing. And then she says, no, I can't. I can't leave. You know, I can't uproot all this stability that I've had in my life with my husband. And she leaves. And then you've got the kind of the mysterious hope of the FedEx lady.
No, you're right. You're right. Except here's the problem. And I know this isn't the movie we watched, everybody. Don't worry. We'll get back to Da Vinci Code.
I don't remember any of this. I can't believe that you're describing all this stuff.
Did you walk out when he got off the island?
I'm afraid that I saw, like I saw it in the theater and the projectionist missed a reel. That's what I'm afraid of because
the last thing you remember?
Yeah, what do you remember?
My memory of this, of the end of this movie is that he gets rescued off the island.
Yeah.
And right. Then the very next thing is him hopefully tracking down a FedEx woman, a person whose package he knows the address of.
Yeah, you missed something,
you don't remember,
man.
You totally missed none of the,
and he's basically like
Tarzan reacclimation to the world. You don't remember that?
I don't remember that at all.
Oh,
I
man.
He can't sleep on the bed in the hotel room. He's got to sleep on the floor because he's used to.
Right. It sounds like 10 minutes of the movie was just cut out for me.
Wow. Maybe you had to poo or something.
Randy gets popcorn.
Exactly.
Right.
Randy, have the poo.
It's been so long. I'm going to go get something to eat.
I'm going to die.
And I'm liking my version better because all of that crap sounds like unnecessary.
Yeah, this is my whole point. I actually think all the reacclimation stuff, I'm with you, Ibbett, that stuff's really beneficial to the show, but what ruined the movie what ruined that part for me was I think it was implied when he walked out of there that she would very much wish that history would have been different, but that she can't do anything about it. I didn't need them to overtly illustrate it. There's something about that felt forced and
okay.
Weird to me.
I think that awkwardness of them sitting there in the kitchen drinking coffee at 2 o'clock in the morning and her kind of wistfully like, you know, it's a kind of a what could have been, and his entire time on that island, he's thinking nothing about anything else but just getting back to her. And while she's looked for him all these years, she's kind of having to give it up and move on with her life and marry Mr. Big from Sex and the City.
Right.
Well, I mean, it speaks to a lot of people. I mean, it definitely speaks to that whole when men go off to war, and that's kind of the whole idea of this relationship. Mm-hmm. This relationship, he went off to war, and when he comes back, trying to get back into that relationship. So a lot of people can relate to this.
It is, but it's just that part at the end where she runs out and kisses him in the rain. I just like, no, it was implied, and it was already – it was a better tension that they had to leave it awkwardly in the kitchen there. It was maybe a little sadder. It was maybe a little – you know, more hardcore this 10 minutes that Randy missed, but it was still, you know,
and it sounds like a very neat reel. Like there, you know what I mean? Like neatly missed the 10 minutes between his rescue and his decision to go after this complete stranger. Right. Because that's a very hopeful thing. And then credits.
Yeah.
You know, like I got that.
As a film, like if you were a film editor, you would have said, well, perfect. We could take out that entire chunk of thing.
I was looking back, I didn't like the movie at the time, but looking back on it, I apparently could have disliked it even more.
The Randy cut, basically, is what you watched.
Well, one final thing I'll say about that, then we will actually talk about the Da Vinci Code. We're kind of getting a 2-for-1 here, everybody. This is great.
Yeah.
The Wilson stuff with the talking to the ball. Mm-hmm. That stuff does not hold up now. It is just silly and makes you laugh. It's not good.
I would totally do that. That would absolutely be me, because even when I'm working and I've just been alone for 30 minutes in the basement, I start talking to, you know, my Walter White action figure. Well, okay, yeah, I know I'm getting back to work. Okay, no, I know I'm on a deadline, but this game of Overwatch, I've got to finish this game. No, I know I'll get to it as soon as I'm done.
See,
okay?
I'm all in on that. I think that stuff's great, and I don't mind him talking to it, and it works for the movie. Where it doesn't, where it stops working, is it became a meme for him to yell Wilson while it was floating away into nothing, and we're supposed to have this like really visceral, emotional reaction. You can't do it anymore. You can't.
You
I
have
dare
no
you.
Heart, Johnson. I dare you to tear it up.
I dare you.
Every time Wilson time. Floats
I, listen, I dare you to watch that and not laugh your head off while he's yelling at the ball. It's not. It doesn't work.
Okay.
It's kind of important to put Castaway into its context against the internet. Like nowadays, it makes no sense. Like we're just used to a world where I can go online and, you know, I realized that they just lost a Malaysian airliner like 3 years ago and it was a big deal for a while. But that being said, it's a world.
Did you find it on Google Earth and you didn't tell us?
No. I'm saying it's a world where the audience's expectations have to do with this interconnectedness that even in 2000, we were still kind of getting used to.
Yeah.
We're just barely getting there. And we didn't, you know, we definitely didn't have smartphones. And so now this movie seems kind of antiquated. Like, of course, the Helen Hunt character went on to Tinder the next week. I mean, she thought he was dead. Like, oh, wait. That didn't exist. It was kind of a big Tinder, deal for sure. Someone to,
she you know? Sent in her application to Great Expectations.
That's right.
With a little heart in the top left corner.
Yeah, they hadn't quite gotten to the filming part yet. But all right, well, there's so there you go. But bonus sack of
Castaway,
which is not as good as Da Vinci Code. What a great film!
What a
guys.
Film!
Huh?
What a wonderful film! We're gonna play. Listen, Fletcher's got to describe it, so we'll let him do that, and then we'll come back.
The Da Vinci Code. When the curator of the Louvre is killed, a Harvard professor and a cryptographer must untangle a web of deceit involving works of Leonardo da Vinci.
Leonardo?
Leonardo da Vinci.
That's the Da Vinci
Code. I need these descriptions to go a little longer. That wasn't enough.
And there was a little part of me waiting for him to go, Castaway. Tom Hanks is stuck on an island for 5 years.
Well, the descriptions are only so long, right? So like he'll read whatever they are. Yeah, sometimes he'll improv out some extra stuff, but you know, not
no, I'm
today.
Just saying, I'm asking people who edit IMDb, get your game together.
Yeah,
you're not putting enough information in the description.
Up your game.
Sometimes I think it's just written by somebody who got the thing out of TV Guide and they haven't actually watched the movie.
Yeah,
TV Guide.
I agree.
TV Guide.
I can see Ibbot gets his TV Guide on the weekly.
Well, he gets his TVGuide.com.
If you have TV Guide, you don't need a TV.
Hey, honey, have you seen my Reader's Digest and the TV Guide?
Well, those were the days.
Oh, that Jack Tripper.
So, directed by Ron Howard. He's a big fan of the source material. Dan Brown wrote the book. Akiva Goldsman wrote the screenplay. And Ron Howard and Dan Brown can be seen in the movie. There's a couple of scenes where Ron Howard's in the audience at the speech he was giving at the top of the movie. And Dan Brown is at the book signing just over his shoulder. So there's
That speech.
Okay.
Yes, let's talk about the speech.
Okay.
I hope you're going to mention the fact that I've never seen any group of people be so enthusiastic about answering.
So what do you see here?
Questions.
Boogers, man, face. It's like,
and so well spaced in their responses. Evil, devil.
It was perfect.
Pitchfork.
That nothing like that has ever happened. First of all, in the history of mankind, no one has ever been introduced as the world expert on anything. Like there's no one world expert on anything, much less this study that's intensely cultural, right? Like how could he be the biggest expert in the world on something? Like what did he do? Does he spent 100 years traveling into every culture? It's ridiculous.
Well, it's not even intensely cultural. It's intensely interpretive, right? Like everything about his quote unquote science, it's just like, well, all right, I guess that looks like a wiener up close, but if you pan out, it's the Pope. Like it.
Also, I just want to say, I've known a few academics. I don't think anybody actually would use the word symbology. I think they would all use a much more specific branch, like iconography or semiotics or syntactics or something. Like
So it's funny you say that because I looked it up. Symbology is the word the actual definition is the study or use of symbols. But I agree with you. It sounds wrong. It sounds broken. I don't know. What are you doing? I am of the breakfast eatingness of the morning.
Yeah, it would be like if someone was introduced as the world's greatest mathematician and they're like, yeah, I study math.
Yeah.
No, they would say I'm a mathematician.
Sure. Symbology is weird.
Just one of those things.
I kind of agree. It's a weird word. Anyway, so let's see. They got your Tom Hanks, your Audrey tattoo. Jean Renault, who claims
Jean
Renault, he claims that he's the inspiration for Dan Brown's character in the first place, and I can totally see it. In fact, I remember when reading the book in 2004 going, you know who could play this guy? That Jean Renault, like, professional dude.
Wow.
Yeah, in my head, that's what popped. Because, you know, he's French, and he's a police dude.
He's the only Frenchman we know. He's Patrick.
That's a good point. We don't know.
No, the other Frenchman,
Gerard Depardieu.
Gerard Depardieu, yeah, that's right.
Oh, hit him in the other one.
He couldn't do anything.
Yeah. No.
Was he not in this movie?
No. He needed to be. His nose requires its own trailer, and that's expensive. So
Plus he pees on planes.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, I forgot about that. He did pee on a plane, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that about? What was the deal?
Because they wouldn't let him get up to go to the restroom because the it was during takeoff or landing or something. And so he just walked into the aisle, dropped trow, and peed right there in the middle of the plane.
So he squatted?
No, he peed. Well,
peed.
I mean, I know the French often squat to pee, but sorry, Patrick. But no, look, for real, like he just peed and then was arrested or banned from the airline or something or some crazy
something,
thing.
Something, yeah. Yeah.
He'd been drinking a lot, I think was the deal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I can tell you this with some level of accuracy because I'm sure I've seen bits and pieces, but I've never seen a full film with Gerard Depardieu in it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really? You never saw a Green Card with Andie MacDowell?
Nope. Never saw 16.
My Dad the Hero. Yeah,
My Dad the Hero was on HBO every 30 minutes.
Never
for
saw
like
it.
A decade.
It was. Never saw it.
The daughter was somebody we know now, but who was she? But back then it was like, who's that?
Amanda. No, it wasn't Amanda Bynes. So it was somebody like that, though, where, but much obviously older.
Amanda Tapping? Amanda.
Yeah, it was Amanda Tapping from Stargate.
Amanda Hug and Kiss? No.
That's not right.
So,
I'm gonna get you, kids.
But my point is, like, what was I going to say about him? Oh, he just was always this actor I knew of, but never.
Catherine Heigl.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was Catherine Heigl.
It was Catherine Heigl.
Was she like a little kid? And
I just had to come around. Scott, you never watched My Father the Hero.
Nope. Nope.
Oh,
I never saw it either. Honestly.
So it was Catherine Heigl. So she was also Steven Seagal's daughter in Under Siege 2, right?
Oh, really?
Oh, really? Wow.
I didn't know that. What's she doing now?
So I just got to run this down for you, Scott. So Gerard Depardieu is a divorcee who goes on a Caribbean vacation with his estranged daughter.
Played by Catherine Heigl, right?
Right. Who's like 14.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And to impress some boy that she meets in the Bahamas, she tells the boy that her dad is actually her lover.
Mm.
And the boy spreads this rumor throughout the entire resort, but her dad, Gerard Depardieu, never figures it out until the end. And so he just goes on about his business, and everybody thinks he's the creepiest, weirdest thing ever. And hilarity ensues until, I swear to God, he's sitting at a piano singing the song Thank Heaven for Little Girls, and everybody is about to lynch him.
Wow. I've zero.
See, we should have watched that.
Knowledge of this film.
It would have been much shorter than this.
Yeah, this was long. Hours. This is long, long-ass movie, man. This thing
I saw. I don't admit to falling asleep during movies often, but I did fall asleep and had to rewind like 30 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. What part did you kill off in? Was it when they were talking all the Hardy
Boys? I think after
Boys?
Magneto did some things. It was just
he's the best thing in the movie, though.
Yeah, he really is.
Like acting wise and kind of just like making the scenes pop a little bit. He's the only thing. Like Tom Hanks is phoning it in hardcore. He's a great actor, but come on, man, this is terrible for him. Like Randy had said. So the other day, this is full disclosure. We were going to watch something called Shark Lake with Dolph Lundgren in it. And Dunaway saw it, and the tone I got from Dunaway was, ooh, we should veto this piece of shit, even though you took a bullet for everybody.
It was only an hour and a half long, but it was Shark Lake is not even, it's not good enough to be good, not bad enough to be good either. It's just kind of
just bad,
right across the middle of meh.
It's just kind of a bad idea. So sometimes this will happen. One of us or all of us will veto something and move on to whatever's next. And so we moved on to this. And Randy's comment was immediately, man, Da Vinci Code is terrible or something. Like in the Slack, you were just like not giving it any stuff. And in my head, I'm thinking, well, I read the book. It wasn't that bad. And this is Tom Hanks and Ron Howard. This can't be too bad. And I never saw the movie in the theater. So I thought, well, this will be fine. It's pretty bad. I mean, it's bad.
And it's not even bad that it's bad. It's just boring.
It's just
to me.
not great.
Maybe it's, and maybe I just don't understand all the history. Maybe, I feel like maybe I was, I don't understand as much about the Catholic Church as I should.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it just felt like they were explaining. It's like reading Genesis and going, so-and-so begot so-and-so. So-and-so begot so-and-so. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I'm such a big fan of movies where they have puzzles and you know, clues and things that lead you to something else. But this one's done in such a way that you're not really given time to figure anything out before the characters do. Mm. And the characters do it with such a unrealistic speed. Like, you know, you see Tom Hanks and his CBS's numbers kind of thing with like letters and stuff glowing and popping out and stuff. And she's like, oh, you have a photographic memory or something like that. No, I don't. And yet he's like Rain Manning this anagram that's written on the floor.
He's seeing it like Tron would see things movies always, this is where movies fail for me sometimes when they try to, if somebody's kind of a savant at something, they try to visually convey that, and it never works for me. Like, that kind of works in that Sherlock show with the visualization that you always see Sherlock doing. That kind of fits. For some reason, it works there. I don't know why it works there and nowhere else. But
I think it works because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You don't really care if Sherlock is thinking in a specific way to reach a certain solution because he's freaking Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
This movie, this is some dumpy fat guy in a bad fitting coat. Like, he needs to, if you're going to display, if you're going to show me how he's thinking, it needs to make some sense to me.
I wouldn't call him a fat guy necessarily. This was still.
I'm sorry. Again, Castaway to this movie, dude gained 100 pounds. It doesn't necessarily make him fat. He's a little chubby.
The fattest I've seen him was at the beginning of Castaway when he had put weight on for the role to look big on the plane until he crashed.
To make more of a difference,
And then later, after he knocked the tooth out of his mouth with a skate, I'd remind you, he was suddenly brought to skinny man land, and that was really weird and jarring. Anyway, I don't mean to go back
Scott,
to that.
What do you remember about the movie Seven?
Seven, let's see. You know what? Seven is a really good... You know what? You're going to be surprised which one of the seven killings or whatever stands out to me. It's the gluttony guy.
Wow.
The guy,
it's not the whole reason. One. It's not the thing that caused... Yeah, that one is pretty horrible, but it's not the thing that caused you to throw the disc out in the snow?
No, the one that caused me to... Well, I mean, at the time, I was so angry about the box. Oh, my gosh. I was so mad. It's because my wife was pregnant at the time. It was just like, really, my second daughter was coming, and it just, this idea that you could cut the head off a pregnant lady and put it in a box. Holy shit, Kevin Spacey, you're such a freaking dick.
All right, one more. Tell me the thing you remember about the TV series Shogun.
There is a scene where, what's his name? There's two scenes where, what's his name? Richard Chamberlain. Seems like he's kind of in a raw deal. He's put into this like underground prison with a bunch of Japanese prisoners, and he watches a guy barf and die. So that happens. And then then later, thinks he's kind of getting the upper hand with the powers that be, but the samurai dude throws Richard Chamberlain on the ground on his face, whips out his wee-wee, and pees all over the back of Richard Chamberlain. He has to just lay there grooving on it. That's it. And that's it. That's it. That's all I remember about
there
that.
Go.
So I haven't seen Shogun in 35 years, which is to say I was a tiny child when this thing was on TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, my parents thought it was so far over my head that I could just come and go while they were watching the television event of the century.
Right.
It was Shogun.
Yeah.
It was a really big deal, at least from my perspective. Really, really
I think
big
that
deal.
It's like that roots and like maybe that may even be it. Like those were huge at their time. For sure.
Thornbirds was another one.
Oh, yeah, Thornbirds, dude.
Thornbirds.
Oh, my gosh, my mom.
Day After was the one I remember.
Day After was kind of our first one like that.
There wasn't a Sackett's miniseries, but there was one. There was something like that, like North and South. North and South was another one.
That was a big one.
Oh, yeah.
So, apparently I was a little kid, and these things were on TV all the time. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, the miniseries was great.
Yeah.
Anyway, I distinctly remember, I haven't seen it since then, but I distinctly remember coming in the room and hanging out in Shogun when the main third-party Japanese guy goes to commit suicide.
Mm.
And anyway, there's a main guy, and then there's his rival.
Mm.
And his rival finally gets so disgraced that he goes to commit suicide. And I'm sure on television, it was depicted by a close-up of his face wincing.
Yeah.
You know, and all you knew was there was probably a knife going into his gut.
Yeah.
But my parents thought that I was about to see something that would scar me for life. And my mom tackled me and we went rolling out of the room so that I couldn't see this scene.
Yeah.
And of course,
that's better than a towel.
I know. Right? And of course, what's a little kid doing? Straining the eyes wide open, trying to see the television.
Yeah. Right. And then your imagination takes over. It's worse than it ever could have been. Like,
Parents
really are funny with this sort of thing. Yeah. Every time my dad would do that with a blanket or a towel on the TV, we would go into high curiosity mode. Like, what could he possibly have been so ridiculous by throwing a blanket on the TV for? We have to find it, Matt, brother, I'd say.
So then years pass by, and I finally become old enough to gain access to the public library. I read every James Clavell book years before I was ready for it. I mean, I probably read King Rat at age 8.
Wow.
I probably read Shogun when I was 10, and no 10-year-old should read that book.
Yeah.
That book is not, you are not ready for that book.
No, that book and the show, the miniseries is way toned down compared to the book.
The book is freaking brutal and everyone kills themselves.
Yeah.
It's a miracle anyone survives that book.
Yeah, no, dude, it's so funny how that stuff sticks with you. But for whatever reason, that kind of body horror stuff always stays in my head, even in modern things. Oh, yeah. Like, I'm trying to think of something recent. Like, I don't know. I can't think of a good one. Actually, you know what got me?
How about the Da Vinci Code when we're talking, when this dude is what strapped that thing in his leg?
Okay, right. So that, I have a question about that. I had read somewhere that was to quell lust. Like, specifically wrapped around your upper thigh was supposed to make it so a dude would just never, ever want to do it because it was so painful and so, I guess, proximitous to his junk. Or something.
You could save a lot of metal and just wrap something like that around your wiener and have the same effect.
Yeah.
You know what would be even cheaper than that? Accidentally zip your foreskin into your pants zipper. And
that's why he was wearing ropes.
Right. That's the super cheapest way to punish yourself.
Oh, you know what? And this is also how my brain works. All I could think about with him, and by the way, that's Paul Bettany. I love him. He's great. He's Jarvis from your Iron Man movie.
Yeah, and Vision. Yeah, and Vision. Crazy.
Yeah, he's super cool. And if you guys ever want to see him in something also historically really cool, go see Master and Commander. He's great in that.
Oh, yes.
Anyway.
Yes. Now, have we or have we not watched A Knight's Tale for FilmSack?
We have not.
No, I don't think we've talked about it.
I think we had a near miss once when it got pulled. But.
Okay. All right. We had a near miss. Because it's the introduction of Paul Bettany to film, in my opinion, and it's so fun.
I love Paul Bettany. So he's great, and he's great in this. He's again, one of the higher points, I think, of he's a really interesting villain-type, conflicted sort of messed up dude. But all I could think about the entire time was he is just freeballing it in his robe constantly. He wears nothing else, which apparently doesn't seem odd to anyone else in the modern world. This guy running around in a freaking monk robe. And all I could think about is he probably just smells like wet cheese or something.
I'm sorry to say, Scott, in Europe, people come and go wearing robes all the time and no one gives them a second glance.
And France, the whole place, all France smells like wet cheese. So who would notice?
Well, okay, you make a good point. But like in a monk looking robe with like a albino dude inside, I don't know, man.
Right.
I think I'd see that and go, oh, that's a little out of place, even if I was in Europe.
There's something you don't see every day. I wonder if he's dangerous.
Yeah. Wonder if trouble's coming with him. Anyway, so wrapping that thing around your leg, that's a real bummer. It didn't really stick out to me though.
Really?
Yeah. Because
I found it horrible. Like the thing I remember hating the most about this movie was his torture of himself.
Yeah.
I remember it being a lot worse in the book for what that's worth.
You know, you say that, but when you're reading, you can just kind of skim forward when, you know, the tails of the Cat of Nine Tails dug into his skin, ripping into the flesh. You're just going to moving forward here. When you're watching a movie, I mean, I realize you can close your eyes or leave the room or something, but you don't know to do that until you've seen the gore, right?
Yeah.
And then you're already there.
Was this PG-13? Because there was a lot of man butt for 13, I thought.
Right. It was PG-13, right? It was PG-13. Okay. You can show man butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All his stuff was pretty hardcore. But between him and Ian McKellen, they're my two favorite actors in here. Yes, Brian, sorry.
Mm-hmm. There was no Ian McKellen, but
yeah,
so
there was.
that scene where he's right when he was you know, punishing himself and doing all that, that actually ratcheted up the suspense level for me. And I was thinking, oh man, this guy is just going to increasingly get more and more bent out of shape. And I had just expected so much from that character, but you know, it just kind of just went down from
there.
Yeah,
it kind of fizzled. I mean, at the end of the day, he's this like highly trained assassin, protector of the secret dude or whatever, and then
right.
and then he ends up accidentally shooting Doc Ock in the gut.
Yeah. Right, right.
The give me the idol, I'll throw you the whip guy from Indiana
Alfred
Jones.
Alfred Molina.
Alfred Molina, that's the guy. Mm-hmm. And that's just a bummer. That's just like, yeah, oops, right. whoops, I didn't mean to shoot you.
I think the problem
Rube
with
Goldberg
this,
device of pain is what it is.
The problem with this Silas character played by Paul Bettany is that since this movie, we've all seen No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
And so we're thinking, oh, he's this level of talented psychopath. No, he's just a psychopath. And
mm-hmm.
he eventually, you know, falls on his sword.
Do you need to take a second to yell at the waitress for dropping your plate?
Yeah, what was
right,
that?
You would think so. That was actually me. I dropped my phone.
Oh, that was your phone? Yeah. Sounded like you dropped the entire second course of the meal.
Right.
His phone is made of bone.
It actually landed near my coffee cup.
It's like how many charms like do you have on your phone?
Yeah, my gosh. That's amazing. So all the terms. So yeah, he's not that kind of killer, that kind of character, unfortunately. But Paul Bettany certainly has the chops to be that, and do that pretty well. And I guess I just wanted more out of that. And in the book, he felt more like that in the book to me. And I'm really fascinated by this idea of somebody who's so, whatever side he's on, is so devout and so focused on what he is and what he does. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting to me because it's just this part of human psychology that never ends well. And right. That's really cool. So I was excited about his role, and he was great until it wasn't. And then it was just kind of dumb and he went out.
You know, I've kind of probably given the impression that this movie was bad, but I wouldn't say this movie is bad. I just never felt like it was meant for me. I'm not really big into the anagram kind of scene or the historic kind of way. It just, none of the material in this movie interested me. I can't fault the quality of production. I can say that the plot a lot of times was, you know, was ridiculous, like from the Louvre, from Sophie's grandpa getting shot and having time to go around and smear stuff in his own blood and anagrams and make this whole right. mystery. I'm like,
really,
come on.
It seems like he had a lot of time to go and like right. leave messages and write this and yeah. ooh, what's a good anagram for purple?
Yeah.
Right.
Nothing puts you nothing puts you down like a gut wound like that. Yet somehow he's Spider-Man, dude. He got a lot right. done. Got a lot yeah. done between those those two times. And here's the thing, Brian, I'm actually kind of into that, but it's better from a book perspective. Like those things come right. out better in a book. You can describe them better because in here it's like, what's that? Well, it appears to be a blah, 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 a secret treasure. Like the dialogue just is bad around that.
Yeah. I would like to see somebody do a mashup of every scene with Tom Hanks making a face in it of like, oh, what? Like making yes. a revelation. Because it's got to be just like 20 minutes of just
there
that.
Was a formula every single time. Like, so they'd go and do, they'd discover a new clue. And then right. just as he is completing that clue or figuring out that this thing opens, he looks up at Audrey Tautou and then looks back down. So like it happens with right. the, you know, the fleur-de-lis in the floor at Roslyn.
The fleur-de-lis.
It happens, you know, when they're. In the sub-basement.
Right.
Every time he found a fleur-de-lis, he'd go,
the fleur-de-lis.
The fleur-de-lis.
The fleur-de-lis.
Constantly. Like, no, we yes. know. We know. We see yeah. it right there on camera. It's right there. Right. You don't have to say it.
And it's funny, like, the first time you see the fleur-de-lis on the floor in the basement, it's pretty clear and obvious. And then the next shot is him, like, brushing a pound of dust and dirt out of there. It's like, right. it looked pretty clear a second
yeah.
ago.
Yeah. And now it's all cleared out. And he says,
the fleur-de-lis.
No, we know. We see it. Yeah. You don't have, nobody's sitting here going, hey, that's the Saints logo for the Saints down. You know, no, we know. We know what it is. Right. Gosh, right. dang it. That drove me crazy. So I don't like it when the movie doesn't trust me enough
Right.
To let
and
me
I would,
figure it
I
out.
Would argue that's actually a failure of production. You know, Brian just said that it, he felt like it was a very well-produced movie. I disagree. I feel like Ron Howard phoned it in, didn't use any of his tricks, and the tricks he did employ were just childish.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know what Ron Howard tricks are. I want to, because I'm, what's some of the Ron Howard tricks?
Well, okay. So he's the guy, so he did Apollo 13, right?
Right.
Is it Apollo 12? Which one was it? 13? 11? Apollo 11? Whatever it was. One of the Apollo missions that had Tom Hanks in it.
Friday the 13th. Wait, is that all tied in?
So he. Oh, I captured that too. I hate that line in this movie.
That's horrible.
So he did that, and that is an incredible, taut, awesome movie with amazing acting, and everybody's great in it, and you know, like, wow, I don't know what it is, but whatever Ron Howard's skills are, they're on display pretty heavily in that movie. Flip over to this one.
I just want to point out, I think the better comparison is A Beautiful Mind, which predates this movie.
Yeah.
So A Beautiful Mind won Oscars because of how the world of this genius was depicted, you see?
Yeah.
And if you start looking at Ron Howard's films with a few exceptions, right? Like How the Grinch Stole Christmas has to kind of, you know, fit its own story, right? But if you look at his movies, they all have these things where you could tell a filmmaker sat back and said, how am I going to depict this in a way that the audience gets it? It's a strange intellectual thing.
Yeah.
It's like
Schindler's List for Spielberg and then Crystal Skull for Spielberg. It's like, where did he check out and why? You know, like, how is that even the same director? And you're right. I get when they're like the flashback sequences in this thing where they're trying to tell historical stuff and it was all like the weird grainy black and white. Like right. It looked like some sci-fi show. It looked bad.
It did. So that was kind of the whole. It totally like something you would see aliens autopsy kind of thing. It was
yeah, like reenactments. That. Yes, yes. Yeah. Very well said. That's what it reminded me of. Is like, you know, we don't have actual footage of any of this fake shit we're talking about on the History Channel about aliens. So here's some weird lighting and jerky camera work of a fake alien on a table. Like it's like a dream sequence on the X-Files in 1993. It was real weird.
I just want to point out Ron Howard has this ramp up in the 80s where he directs Night Shift, then Splash, then Cocoon, then Gung Ho, then Willow, then Parenthood. And all throughout it, he's becoming a better filmmaker. Those are relatively pedestrian films. But then he makes Backdraft and everybody freaks out about Ron Howard, the filmmaker. And what he did in Backdraft wasn't pedestrian at all, which was give you a sense of how a house fire works, which is remarkable.
That was the biggest part of that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just amazing that somehow got translated to film. Ron Howard's a great director. Yeah. And then he makes all these great movies. And then this shit comes along.
And then he did a sequel. He did Angels and Demons, which I guess is
actually,
a prequel.
I actually want to watch it because I think I've seen parts of Angels and Demons. And it seems like I remember it actually being fairly compelling from what I saw of it, so it maybe it's a little more action-packed, a few less anagrams, and more.
It's long regarded as the better book and the better adaptation. Right. However, that may be a relative thing. I don't know, but it's because I haven't seen it. And the book, I got about halfway through and got bored, so I quit reading it. And then that was the end of my Dan Brown books. I'm done with you, Dan Brown.
Dan Brown.
I don't know why I got so bored with it. Maybe I just didn't think the themes were as universally compelling as, whoa, Jesus is married and, you know, like all these ideas are kind of cool on their own. So the Angels and Demons didn't really have that for me. But yeah, I mean, like IMDb rates it higher, Rotten Tomatoes rates it higher. Like it's
everyone
it's
I've
to be
talked
better.
To. I've never seen the movie. Everyone I talked to called Angels and Demons crap. So I don't know.
Really? Yeah. Really? Again, it's probably relative. Like I say, this feels like maybe it was like him going, hey, we could have a franchise film thing here, and we could even like the Bourne movies. We could keep going and make other.
Like the Jack Ryan, like kind of along the same lines of the Jack Ryan ones too. And there's a third book, right? And is there talk of making that into a movie?
Oh, I don't know. I you'd think you'd heard by now, though, right?
Yeah, like. I guess so. We would have heard probably 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, these so Robert Langdon books. You're right. Are there three? One's Angel and Demons came out first, then Da Vinci Code, and then some third one.
Lost Symbol in 2009 and Inferno in 2013.
Oh, so there's four. Okay. Well, maybe, you know, I don't know. Somebody. I mean, look, it's not like this isn't decent source material. It's just I don't know. You'd think it was all perfect. Tom Hanks, Ron Howard.
Ron Howard directing.
Would you like to know how little, how much this is a surprise? They are adapting Inferno, which came out in 2013, and it's coming out this year.
Oh my gosh! No. Wait, who's in it? Tom Hanks in it?
No, Tom Hanks is in it,
and Ron Howard's directing it.
What?
Oh wow! Now I've got to go back and watch Angels and Demons then.
Holy shit! There you're right. Okay, hold on.
And it's coming out in October. Scott.
Ben Foster's in it?
Yep, coming out in October.
All right, officially excited.
Felicity Jones.
I loved Ben Foster. I have a thing for Ben Foster that is unhealthy.
Don't you wish he had played Khadgar?
Yeah, a little bit.
And some other jerk had played Medivh?
I kind of agree. He'd have been a better Khadgar. The Khadgar was too... Yeah, he's my only other complaint about the Russell Brower music and Khadgar casting are my only complaints about the work.
There were some themes that nodded to Russell Brower and Jason Hayes music.
But not enough. I mean, and actually, it's not bad if you listen to it on its own. I just don't think it was worthy of the. And I'm biased, so it doesn't. My opinion.
Guys, we got to steer into the skid. So Ramin.
Hold on, before you do that, Ron. So I'm looking at this thing. There's no goofy mullet hair though in this Inferno movie. Where's the mullet hair?
Really? I haven't seen a picture yet.
Yeah, he's just so,
is he cropping it close now? Is he
Yeah, it's Tom Hanks normal, like just Tom Hanks looking like Tom hair.
Hanks.
And,
wow.
And he's in you know, I don't want to
figured out everyone's number one complaint about Angels and Demons and Da Vinci Code is Tom Hanks' hair. Because every reviewer I remember at the time, every reviewer mentioned the hair.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's actually I sent you guys in Skype a article about his hairstyles from one of his first movies, and then it kind of apexed at the Da Vinci Code. So they've talked about his different hairstyles throughout the generations. So obviously it made a huge impact on people.
Okay. Well, all you had to say is Ben Foster is in it, and that's kind of all I needed to go see it. I wasn't going to probably care, but now I care. And that's weird. I know. Go watch 310 to Yuma, people out there listening. You want to see Ben Foster at the peak of his talent, that my lord, that thing is just impactful and hella good. So go see that. Go watch 310 to Yuma is our recommendation this week.
He's not bad as Medivh. Like, he's pretty much the best thing in the movie. Hipster Khadgar didn't work for me.
Nope. Hipster Khadgar, no good.
Mm-hmm.
Orcs were the best, though. My gosh. Freaking Durotan. Oh, yeah. What a badass mother scratcher. freaking loved all that stuff.
Yeah, and my wife wants to have a talk with Terpster, but that's another story.
Oh, altogether. Did she hear the train thing from the?
No, she hasn't. She hasn't. I'm kidding. I just heard it today.
Oh, it's really funny because he goes. So I was like, well, Tina gave the effects such a great compliment, and they asked, and so I told the story, and I said Tina leans over at me at the sushi place and says, "Are some of those guys real? Are those real people?" And I said, no, they're motion capture people, but it's CGI and it's just, you know, it's performance capture. But she's like, wow, that is amazing. And she even prefaced it by saying, this might be a dumb question, but, you know, so it's not like she was like, is that like those real people? It's not like that. So Terpster goes,
can those toys really talk in Toy Story?
So Terpster goes, that's not a compliment. That's like saying the train's coming out of the screen at me or whatever. And I'm like, so I thought, all right, well, when Brian hears this, he can tell Tina, and then Tina and Terpster can have the battle royale we've all been waiting for.
Yeah.
It absolutely is a compliment.
It absolutely is. I completely agree. Sure. I completely agree.
I don't understand.
Ah, they're British. Joke. What do they know? They're in France and Britain. They're both chuckling like chuckleheads.
Plus, you know, when you've got a fantastic human specimen like me at home, you can see why, you know, she'd see these giant orcs on screen and say, well, those could be real.
Yeah, I mean, I live with one that's sort of like that.
And I would argue that you, of course, have to be like an expert on Toby Kebbell or Robert Kaczynski. But if you were to, if you knew those guys, like if I had you go camping with Toby Kebbell and Robert Kaczynski and Clancy Brown and Daniel Wu, and then I just showed you some moving images of those four orcs, you would be able to tell me which was which, because some of the facial features in the eyes come through.
Especially
right?
Kebbell, yeah.
It's like what they did with Ruffalo and the Hulk in the first Avengers film.
Totally, yeah. And these are the same some of the same people who worked out the Hulk stuff are did the Warcraft movie, which I think is super cool. It makes sense, you know. You're good at making big Hulking dudes. Hey, we got some orcs for you. Come on over here and do this.
Like, you could really see Daniel Wu in that scene where Gul'dan is sitting and he's vaping off of a slave.
Yeah. He was like, totally vaping. Really see,
yeah, he's vaping off his leg. And it's, you could really see Daniel Wu there.
I love that. Vape, slave vape. That's amazing. Yeah, slave vape. Nice. So one other thing, too, is Kebble, who plays Durotan, or did the performance for Durotan, his eyes are unmistakable because of the same eyes that he showcased in the two Planet of the Apes remake movies recently.
Yes.
And he played, what was the name of that? Crazy freaking monkey. He's the evil one, though, in that. And so it was a little, there's actually a little dissonance at first.
Koba.
Koba. What a freaky little freaky monkey. And so seeing that was kind of weird at first because I recognized those eyes. Anyway, it's funny. Mm-hmm. Humans are funny. Orcs are rad. Terpsters crazy. All right. That's one quick thing here. The French inspector's name was Bézu Fache. Okay. It's a crude pun in French, I guess. The words roughly translate to angry effer.
Okay.
Nice.
Which also alludes to Fache's short-tempered attitude. Also, he's kind of a chick in the bucket. He sort of disappears at the end.
So. I never cared about the actual police in this movie. The actual police, it's like, I don't care what they do. I don't care if they know what's going on or if they don't, if they show up or if they don't. Like, the movie's going to carry on without them.
Wasn't part of the deal that Fache wasn't... Fash or whatever, Leon there, wasn't he in one of the groups though, right? Or what, his little lapel pin?
Yeah, he was called by the bishop to take care of, so just while he's wearing that pin.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Okay. So, okay. Never mind at all.
Was that Opus Dei that he was?
Yeah, he was at Opus Dei because it was the same bishop.
Opus Dei.
He was the same bishop that was running Silas around and telling him what to do. They got shot by him. So, or, yeah, Doc Ock, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So anyway, now it all fell in place. Never mind. I'm being dumb. I forgot that was that connection. But so it was just hard to tell. Was he good? Was he bad? Was he just really?
He was neither. He was manipulated. He was one of the manipulated. Mm. And he had had enough.
But the police are so feckless. Did anyone watching this movie need the explanation of how the fugitives got from the private jet into the back of the car?
That is so funny. We did not need that. We knew why. We just, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
They were smuggled under Magneto's big coat.
No, they just
shall look over there.
You shall not
pass.
That's
what they did. It was this, they jumped out of the plane. It was really necessary.
The trope of the dumb cops who don't look under every crevice in that building.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And they're French.
They tried to balance that by saying, oh, well, you know, they don't like the French. Therefore, anything the French tell them is going to be a bunch of crap anyway. So
hey, I love the old really British and the French effort. Don't get along thing. I think that's always a fun, stupid idea to play with because I don't think it holds up like it used to. But the idea that the French and the British are just like, meh, you're a butthole. No, you're a butthole. And I think that's great. Mm-hmm. So Ron Howard. Okay. See if this you guys think this is fake. You can just call it out. All right. Ron Howard first envisioned choice for the role of Robert Langdon was Bill Paxton. That's possible. Paxton was interested but turned it down because of scheduling conflicts. Russell Crowe was then seriously considered for the role, but ultimately Howard decided on his longtime friend Tom Hanks for the role. Other actors considered for the part were Ralph Fiennes, Hugh Jackman, and George Clooney.
Now and Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You know what, though? I saw that list on IMDb as well, and I thought, okay, this one seems more believable. I could see George Clooney in that role. I could see Ralph Fiennes.
Mm-hmm. I could see even Hugh Jackman in there.
Hugh Jackman, yeah.
Yeah, I could see him.
I don't think the casting was wrong. I think Tom Hanks was great.
Yeah, but once in a while you're here's another one. Christopher Eccleston was considered for the role of Silas, and I can totally see that, but sometimes I wonder if IMDb people go in there and just go, well, who could have been that guy?
Who would have been good? Yeah.
And I think that happens.
Robot.
Yeah, you got a roll. Your robot's hugging you today.
A CG character.
Not a CG. Oh, look, we've done CGI.
and here's the bit about the Lust thing. Okay, so an ex-Opus Dei member, an actual dude on the record in a tie-in documentary to this film, says that wearing the Silas, or what do you call it? Silis? Whatever, the thing around your leg.
Oh, yeah.
Does not, in fact, quell lust.
No.
meaning it's supposed to, but
if anything, it makes me more excited. He said,
"You get a little boner there from having a little bitty boner there."
Unless you catch a pubic hair in there, in which case, yeah, it has the
effect. That has the effect. Right. Yeah, the effect you're looking for right there. Oh, look at this trope: constantly obscuring naked dude's crotch. I love that in movies where you're just standing in the right place. It's kind of that
the magical flowing sheets of obstruction.
Yeah. Right. Or putting your leg up when you're putting your Solis thingy on or whatever it's called. Yeah. Yeah. It's like it seems like the most awkward and uncomfortable way to put that on by but if you gotta cover your unit, sure, okay.
Yep. I wondered if well, whatever. There's the scene where Silas is in his room trying to whip himself or getting ready to. Sure. And he's naked. And it's all over behind the bum shot of this guy, and he's wearing his chain around his leg, and he's all scarred up on the back and stuff. And Paul Bettany bends down, and I thought to myself, all right, here's one of those deals in movies where they've taped his junk up, because if this was any other human being, we'd be getting hang-me-downs there in the rear. We'd be seeing we'd see two of those balls knocking. And that was, and I'm real glad that that didn't happen. And by the way, save your emails, everybody who thinks all I think about is wieners. I'm talking about a scene in the movie, okay? Gosh dang it, I've been getting a lot of those lately. All right, sorry.
After seeing a wiener this past week on Game of Thrones that I didn't want to see, I'm okay with them being creative with hiding wieners.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, two wieners last episode.
I didn't
need
to see that.
You got two of those.
What's that?
You got two wieners in the last episode of.
Was there two wieners last episode? I didn't see.
Well, you got the one a couple of weeks ago.
I wonder why people send you emails.
So weird. Wiener counting. Wiener
completely counting. Out of nowhere, people send you emails.
It's the same, but it's like the skate and the tooth. These just stick out to me. No pun intended.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. All right. Hearing people yell "merde" is annoying. I just wanted to put that out there. I don't need to hear French people swear. It always sounds stupid to me. So there you go.
Merde is such a funny French swear word.
Merde. It's like supposed to be shit, but they just go, merde. I'm like, okay. It doesn't sound right. I know I'm not living there. If I did, it would, but it doesn't. It sounds dumb.
You know, even if I was French, I'd still say shit. Because it just feels like a swear word. Merde doesn't.
Merde.
You know, it kind of felt
like
they were
really upset. Merde.
Merde. This is bull merde. Anyway, what? What are you saying?
I kind of felt like they were trying to imply occasionally when it was convenient that Tom Hanks's character, Robert, didn't speak French. Yet his book was all in French. Mm. So I was assuming that he understood it. So I just couldn't figure out. It was just something like whenever it was convenient, they used it. But otherwise, it wasn't an issue with him speaking French or understanding it. Didn't like that too much.
Yeah, that stuff seemed to his prowess as a whatever he is would vacillate. Like there'd be moments where he'd be like, I've got this all figured out, and here's my holographic memory with the big giant planet display or whatever at the end when he's trying to figure out the little roly poly deal. Like, he's constantly going genius mode, and then occasionally he would just be like, what's going on? I don't know who this guy is. And then you get chicken because he's inside the back of a truck. And, like, it was really all over the place.
Yeah. His claustrophobia went in and out as well. Like, there were things that you thought he'd be super uncomfortable about. Like, being in the basement at the Roslyn, I think, would trigger his...
The basement.
Yeah. Right. Seems like it would trigger his claustrophobia.
Yeah.
But... And perfect opportunity to do that. And I don't remember the claustrophobia in the book. That feels like it was a Hollywood addition to me. Yeah.
Right. And I think it was, I kept trying to figure it out because it was that classic, our hero has a fear. So usually you would see a payoff, like you would see Indiana Jones afraid of snakes, and he ends up in a pit full of snakes.
Exactly.
So Chekhov's gun.
He needs to somehow overcome that fear to save the day in the movie. And,
right. And so they kind of played it, but it was played at a different angle because he had that fear, but then... Sophie was able to calm him down, and so through that, and that was part of the learning process. They learned that it wasn't necessarily to believe that Jesus didn't have a child, and so on and so forth. But it didn't really feel like a good payoff to me.
I like the idea that during the movie there were multiple times where she did things that you could call kind of miraculous. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I liked
her
that.
Driving and
yeah. That was a fun. That's a fun
her driving.
Idea.
A lady driving is a miracle. What?
No. Her, you know, threading the needle in a busy Paris street. I'm gonna have to kick my computer here in a second. Yeah.
That's weird. Your mic usually doesn't go that crazy.
Can we talk about the very end, though? Because it bugged me.
Yeah, but hold on. Before you do, the very, very end where he figures out where Mrs. Christ is sleeping.
No. Where he imagines.
Mrs. Christ.
Where he imagines something. is what's depicted.
Right, but all I could think of was, I'm not going down there. It's too closed, tight space. I'm going to get claustrophobic if I go down there. That's all I could think about. But yes, I know what you mean. Right. So talk about
it. That's why I say, what if that's just him imagining something? Because of course he's not going to go down there. Of course he would imagine something he fears, a closed, tight space.
Yeah.
Right. Just because he, in his head, he solved the greater mystery, that doesn't mean it's solved.
Yeah.
And that was a right. real letdown for me. Mm. Like, I don't need the Hollywood ending where he goes and unlocks a door no one had seen and reveals the treasure trove that only he could have found. I don't need that. But when it's all in his head, I also don't need that.
Oh, my God. That's such a good point, because there are so many other times in this movie that he could have said, well, I imagine that this is where the quest ends. Yeah. I'm visualizing what's on the other side of that door. Yeah. We're good. I'm totally satisfied.
We're out of here. It was nice to meet you all. I'm back on a plane going home. I'll be in my hotel.
Movie would have been a lot shorter than you know, 2.5 hours if they did that.
Yeah. And doesn't have to go back to his hotel and have blood drop and have it look like a freaking devil's pitchfork or whatever the hell is going on.
Yeah, that was both ridiculous and kind of cool at the same time.
And, was it a little CGI blood there, maybe?
I
wasn't sure.
Well, and like I say, the movie is littered with these little sleight of hand magic tricks, and it just didn't, that seems to me like you're telling a completely different story. Oh, wow, this Robert Langdon guy is amazing. He got that thing open while his back was turned, got the scroll right out of it, into his pocket, got it all put back together, and then threw it at Gandalf. Wow, he is a genius. But then, you know, later he's, no, he's just a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, a little right? bit. It's hard to get behind him in a way that you would with a Tom Clancy character or whatever. He just doesn't have the same, I don't know. I know the idea is that, oh, here's a nerd scientist man who we're supposed to get excited about, but man, he gets whipped up into this controversy or into this conspiracy so quickly, and he's just fine running around, never takes that jacket off, always looks the same in every damn scene. Just like, I don't know, it just didn't feel that, none of that felt realistic to me for this nervous guy who can't get on an elevator to suddenly be like, we've got to somehow fool him at the Louvre that we left because right. my little beeper right. thing's on a truck now, and all that kind of stuff just didn't ring real. It all came off as fake.
But how about the security deposit box? How about that? That was some wicked cool technology.
Oh, where it rotated around? Yeah, that was cool.
That was retarded.
That was not in the book, by the way.
Good, because that was stupid. I hate that kind of tech that was this kind of forced in there. I don't know, to increase the cloak and dagger feel or something. I'm not sure what that was for, but the box coming around that little airport terminal.
Yeah, it was dumb.
Luggage return thing, little arm pull. I'm like, that must cost a fortune to maintain.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be that. Also, the German guy though, there is cool, though. The actor's been in recent stuff on FilmSec. What's his name? It's like Rudger, or not Rudger. I can't think of his name.
Filibuster. Double Agent Man?
Yeah, whatever it is. Anyway, that guy's great. Oh, here he is. Nope. Wrong movie.
Nope, not him.
He's not in Inferno, just so everyone knows, not in Inferno. His name is Jürgen Prochnow.
Jürgen Prochnow. Jürgen.
He was in Beverly Hills Cop 2. You know the guy. He's been in a million things. 24 for a whole season. The guy's so good.
Oh, good old Jürgen.
Yeah, Jürgen. Jürgen's the best. Sounds like a thing to eat. I'll have the Jürgen. Did Tom Hanks have a cold through the entire film?
He did. First thing I noticed.
Like it.
Yeah.
First thing I noticed.
Wondered about that.
So what do you do when your actor? I've always been curious about this in movies. Mm-hmm. What do you do when a character develops a severe sinus or cold during the filming? Because do you continue to make him sound sinusy to match the rest of it? Because you can't make him not sound sinusy in some scenes.
Right? I know what Seinfeld did. So we were just talking about this last night. We saw two episodes. One where Jerry. He's clearly got some horrible chest and congestion thing going on, and his voice is all cracked and messed up. In the show, they explained it away as he was at a show that had a bunch of really loud hecklers, and he had to yell real loud to do his act.
Right.
And so that's how they explain it.
Yeah, because you can't really stop production and, you know, okay, all you other actors that we've paid for the day, go home.
It'd be much easier to try to make that person sound nasally the whole rest of the time than it would be to try to clear that one scene up. So
yeah,
especially when there's so much after production voice recording, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's
right. Mm-hmm.
there's so many productions where they, you know, they're mouthing their lines basically when they're being filmed, and then later they got to go put a great pristine once they're sound.
Well,
yeah, they did that a lot in this movie.
Case,
this movie,
in this
a lot
case,
of that.
Maybe it was the opposite. Maybe he had the cold while doing all of his
voiceover. Oh, right, that totally could be, because there was a lot of that in this. There was tons of VO or what's it called at the end when you do it? It's called something.
AVR.
AVR. Yeah, there's a lot of AVR being done, and you could see it in scenes where two words he just said were recorded on set, then he turned his head, and then one was in the studio, and I guess that always happens. Sometimes it's just more jarring.
Sorry, Mr. Hanks. Got to check you.
Yeah.
Right.
See what's going on. Here's another trope. Nice old man turns on people. That always happens. I mean, you knew the minute you saw him, and I'd read the book, so I already knew this, but when the minute you see Ian McKellen, you're like, something's going to...
He's a bad guy.
Yeah. I did kind of appreciate
it. I didn't see it coming.
Didn't
I didn't either, but I did appreciate his introduction to his character and the three questions that they had to answer
that
to
was
get
great.
Into the compound. I actually enjoyed that part.
That was either great or that's the most annoying friend you have.
right.
You know what? Screw you. I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah. It's just so annoying for him to do that.
I had this cool thing to show you and talk to you about, but forget it.
I'd just yell "Maird" and I'd leave. That'd be the end of it.
Well, I didn't see it coming because Gandalf doesn't spring his reversal until much later than he should have.
Yeah,
right.
He should have. You know, like the minute that it turns out that Silas is his henchman too. Mm-hmm. Like that when Silas shows up at the house.
Yeah,
that's when he should have sprung it all and just. Like, I don't know. It's just weird.
Well, functionally, functionally, let's get where we want to get. The double cross should have happened at the house. I don't understand why it didn't. What would have been the down? Like, they had them right where they want them. They have everything they need to get from them. They're all right there. Why go through this ruse?
And he doesn't know that there's. Gandalf doesn't know that there's going to be subsequent steps.
Right.
As far as he's concerned, they've brought him the final step.
Right.
So that's why I say this is nonsense.
Yeah, and him, let's put him in the trunk and make it seem like we're taking him to kill him and then have him poison the other guy and just, it just doesn't, none of that needed to, now it's bugging me that happened at all. Damn it. Mm-hmm. And this is frustrating because he's the best thing in the movie and I don't want to besmirch my favorite part of the movie. Which was Ian McKellen, just chewing it up, man. He was great.
Yeah, he was doing a great job. Yeah. Loved it. However, I was a little disappointed in the divine intervention of doves during that one scene.
Oh,
it was almost a John Woo thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm pointing a gun at you.
What's that? Oh, is it my way?
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't. What? Don't remind me. I hate that.
My favorite thing is. Yeah. My favorite thing in the movie, I'm going to anglicize his name, was Jean-Yves Berthelot.
Sure.
The guy who ends up getting poisoned by Gandalf at the docks.
Yes. His man butler.
Yeah. I love this guy. I got to looking like, where have I seen him before? What is it that I love so much? Can't tell you. I don't know why I like him so much because I've
this
never
movie.
Seen him. This is it.
This is the movie left.
Wait, he's the other French dude?
Okay,
yeah.
No, but you could tell immediately whenever I saw it, when I first saw him, like, that dude is too handsome to not be something bigger than just the butler. I'm not buying it.
Well, I liked his voice mainly. There's something about a gruff French man's voice that I'm really into.
A gruff French man? Okay.
Yeah, if you know
and
what
you
I'm
heard
saying.
It heard it here first, folks. That's what does it for Scott.
Any other thoughts before we adjourn to the clips room?
I will. I like thrillers, but I'm always looking for a deeper meaning in these kind of movies. And in this movie, I spent so much of my time looking at billboards in the background, looking for any words or characters anywhere, looking for anagrams in everything, the whole movie. It was totally distracting for me.
You know what? That's funny. I do this with video games. When I played Skyrim back in 2011, and I played all the Elder Scrolls games, but for some reason that game, and to some degree Diablo and others, but this one even more so because that game you had to look in stuff to find things. Mm-hmm. I got so loot conscious that I was looking in every single urn or bucket or shelf or book or whatever because there's a possibility that any object in the game has something I want in it.
Right.
That I apply that thinking now to every game I play, and that's bad. Because when you're playing a game like I don't know. I'm trying to think of another one. Like one where it's just very linear and there's no loot really at all. I'm constantly checking every corner for stuff. And it drives my kids crazy to watch me play that.
Well, and in some games, it's very explicitly stated, right? Like in Overwatch, there are a few health packs, but it is a huge waste of time and detriment to your team if you go looking around.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. But even in that game, I find myself blowing up barrels for no good reason. And I think it's it's just like, oh, well, that's what you do. You check to see.
Shooting arcade machines and basketballs. And
and by the way, there needs to be two achievements that aren't currently in the game. One needs to be make a basket inside the ship. All right, with the basketball, because we've done it once and there was no achievement. Secondly, and it's almost impossible, so it's like so hard to do. And then secondly, the arcade Hanamura starting area, if you blow up every single arcade machine and claw machine and maybe all the vending machines, if you get that entire room done before the countdown ends, there should be an achievement for that. Like a team-wide achievement. Bling! You all destroyed an arcade. Congratulations! Anyway...
Here's 10 tokens.
Yes.
Panic at the arcade achievement.
Ah, right. Perfect. Yeah. Arcade with fire. Put it on fire. All right. Well, let's do some clips. You guys want to do some clips?
Yeah. Do some clips.
All right. I got
this
a couple.
This movie had so many weird things taken out of context.
It had some strange things, yes. So I'm going to play a few of them here. Here's one. It's Doc Ock, everybody. He's throwing the idol if you give him the whip. Here you go.
Let's cover the talking points again, Your Eminence. Many call Opus Dei a brainwashing cult. Others an ultra-conservative Christian secret society.
Obviously, some people fear what they don't understand.
There he is. That sounds like Alfred Molina to me.
Yeah. And that was the interview that we did not understand why or fought with or nothing else.
Nothing made sense there. They just did it to just, I don't know.
It was a cool scene, though. I loved the moon outside the plane. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Looked nice.
Yeah. Here's, what was that sound?
Yeah.
Someone's computer just went off. I don't know. Who's
Someone having like an air raid? Are you gonna die?
No, I think everything's fine. Here's talking to Jean Renault, who I could listen to read the phone book. I love this guy. Yes. So there you go. Yes.
This is a symbol for Venus. It represents the female half of all things.
You're telling me that Sonia's last act on Earth was to draw a goddess symbol on his chest? Why?
Captain Fash, obviously I can't tell you why.
I need to go to the bathroom for a minute.
I gotta go splash water in my face. I could say pee, but no, I'm gonna say splash water in my teeth.
Here's the.
And by the way, any line of dialogue, I'm telling this for all future filmmakers in the world, any line of dialogue that starts with the words, so you're telling me that. Yeah. You cut that out of your stupid script.
Yeah, right? Bad writing.
That's purely there for the audience. I don't understand what you telling me.
I don't get it. Who's he again? Here, I don't know why he's Southern. Here's a guy. Here's shit in French. Here you go.
Merde.
Merde.
Merde. He
gets so upset because the little beeper went out to the truck.
how did they not see that? I mean, how did they not figure that out? Walk outside and see the garbage truck flying off.
I don't know. They were bad detectives, man. They were bad detectives. Let's just be honest. They spent the whole movie going trying to figure stuff out. There's a lot of this in the movie right here.
Wait a minute.
Professor?
This is wrong. Yeah, see? This is wrong. The Fibonacci numbers only make sense when they're in order. These are scrambled. If he was trying to reach out, maybe he was doing it in code. Would you hold this, please?
I'll tell you what she held, but
yeah. You know, if somebody points out the Fibonacci sequence to you, and it's a bunch of numbers in the wrong order, you're going to say that's not the Fibonacci sequence.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of numbers.
Done. Yeah. Over.
Yet they both identified as the Fibonacci sequence, and at no point at that time do they say, "Well, those are the numbers from the Fibonacci sequence, but they're completely in a different order."
Yeah, and by the way. Here's a piece of dialogue that happens all the time that I never believe is ever happening in real life. Whether you call them by their name or their title, no one ever has a conversation that goes like this. Well, this is strange. And then the other person says, Professor? Like, no. Or even if it was you guys, if Brian Ibbett said, well, this is strange. Brian?
Podcaster?
Yeah, podcaster.
Right.
And it's stupid. That doesn't happen in natural conversation. So how that makes it into scripts, I don't get it. All right. Did they find it?
The church would kill to possess.
Did they find it, this buried treasure?
Buried treasure?
Huh? Buried treasure?
Hamburger?
Okay, I think she might just be bad at acting. So here's her clip to where this proves that out.
The date was October 13th, 1307, a Friday.
Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th.
That's like 31, but the numbers are out of order.
I don't get it.
I saw Amelie at a independent, like a movie theater in North Austin in the Arboretum that I'm sure doesn't exist anymore. Mm. It was the only place in town that was always showing all of these little foreign films.
Sure. We have a place called I think the Tower here that's like that. Yeah.
And I remember it's like 2001 or so. And I remember that was such a revelation. Mm. And I came out saying, this actress is going to change the world. And then she didn't at all.
Friday the
Even
13th.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That is the thing, right? There was so much stuff with Amelie. Oh my gosh. Audrey Tautou is just going to be the greatest thing. And yeah, you're right. Like
she was a revelation.
Mm-hmm. She's like, Show Me the Money guy. Although he was good in that.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah.
His Snow Dogs kind of.
Yeah, or what's her name? Catwoman. What's her name?
Holly Berry.
You get an Oscar and then everything goes to shit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But in her case, she's really good. Cuba Gooding, you didn't really learn much about him as an actor in Jerry Maguire. He only had to play this weird caricature, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so then other movies you learned, he doesn't actually have that much range. He's got he can scrunch his face up, basically.
Yeah.
Horrible, and
he's super good. I hear nothing but good things about him in the role of what's his name? O.J. Simpson and that O.J. Simpson thing.
Forgot he was in that.
It's supposed to be great in that. But listen, uh-huh. I've seen Radio. Never go full retard. And I've seen, what was the other one? Snow Dogs. That was a burning, that was a garbage fire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's
Tell you what, the fact that movie is still in people's minds is. It's pretty impressive. That should have just been a movie that just didn't even exist.
Battlefield Earth is still in people's minds, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Lately.
We're not going to bring that up, but
it's just wrong. I won't go into it.
You'd rather have your movie in people's minds for the right reasons.
Yeah. Because they showed a man wiener.
I can't say Snow Dogs is that bad. I still remember the plot and everything. I mean, it was...
Silly, goofy thing, but it felt like a step ridiculous. Down for him. It was a step down for him, for sure, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't like I went into Snow Dogs thinking, hey, this is going to be, you know, something that's going to be, you know, high entertainment value.
If
you saw Jerry Maguire, you might have thought, all right, this actually, he's an Oscar winner. This should be some pretty good stuff here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's kind of why I went to it. Now, hold on. I just wanted to stave off some angry emails real quick.
Okay.
My never go full retard comment is from Tropic Thunder.
It's a movie reference.
It's a movie reference from Tropic Thunder. If you haven't seen it, I've seen it. I can see why you might take offense. But if you want to be mad at someone, be mad at Tony Stark, not me. All right, moving on. This is that German guy.
Understood. Keys are often passed on, and first-time users are sometimes uncertain of protocol.
I freaking love that guy.
Yeah,
he's great.
He's pointless,
cool.
But he's good.
Yeah. I found a clip of when Ibbett cheated on his prom date.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
This was one of my many other prom dates.
Yeah. Well, it was like the same night, I think. You were like making out with one in the corner while your regular date was like, what the hell's going on here? So here's what he said.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. It was a long way to go for that.
Wow. It really was a long way to go.
Merde.
I was thinking you were going to play a clip of him talking about symbols for men and women, because in some of that I was like, this is just so like, here's a triangle, here's a differently pointed triangle, like it's just so dumb. I don't know. I didn't enjoy that very much. Well, but it would have made good prom date conversation.
Well, I have some of those anyway. So let's see if we can find one here. This one's about, I don't know, Tom Hanks saying something.
I've jammed my shoulder. I've been shot at. I'm bleeding.
Well, boo-hoo. Jeez Louise.
That was, man, you should compare that directly with his speech at the end of The Burbs.
hold that quote, though. Brian Ibbett driving home after leaving the hotel after his prom date.
Yep.
He was just asked what happened up there.
Yeah.
With his prom date.
Any of these would work. We could use
play
any
that again.
All right, try again.
The night you had.
So here he is.
I've jammed my shoulder. I've been shot at. I'm bleeding.
See, that's perfect.
Also, I like Dunaway's idea of comparing that to The Burbs End Shock. That's pretty good.
That's what exactly. He does.
We got that coming up. Been blown up. At some point, we're watching The Burbs, aren't we? At some point.
Did you? Yeah, by the way, in that clip, he suddenly sounds like Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Totally, like, the old Tom Hanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Like
the bachelor party and the comedian. Buddy's Tom Hanks. Yeah.
Yeah, the comedian.
I wanted
Tom Hanks.
That Tom Hanks playing this role.
I could have been fun.
Do you see the thing? The stuff he wrote on the floor?
Yes, that guy.
Clean that up.
Thank you. The Tom Hanks from Buzz, what is
you're
Perfect Strangers.
You're a doll. Yeah. You're a toy.
You're a toy. Exactly. All right.
Thank you.
Here
just
is
made the movie so much better.
Here's Gandalf. 19 seconds of Gandalf.
And now the third and most grave of inquiries. In which year did a Harvard scholar outrow an Oxford man at Henley?
Surely such a travesty has never occurred.
Your heart is true. You may pass.
Yeah, it's either charming or irritating as
you
shit.
You may pass.
Yeah.
You shall not pass.
You shall not pass. Oh, now those are two mashups to do. Yes. You shall not pass. You shall pass.
May pass.
You may pass.
Your heart is true.
You may pass. All right. Earl, this is the note. This is, you know, he's good buddies with Patrick Stewart there. So here's a moment of that.
Earl Grey.
Earl Grey. Would you like some?
Did we catch that?
Earl Grey.
Earl Grey.
Earl Grey. Yes.
Hot, please.
Actually, my problem is I associate him with Gandalf and Magneto. I could not let go of that association.
No, not me. I feel like I don't know. I mean, I've seen so many other things with him in it, like that. What was the one where he was the Nazi guy who was a retired
American
Nazi? No.
One.
He was a... It may have been movies in between X-Men and The Usual Suspects for what's-his-name. And it was a movie he made about... It was an old... So it was an actual German Nazi from World War II who had escaped and was hiding. And he was hanging out with Brad Renfro for some reason. Before Brad Renfro died.
The name Brad Renfro sounds like a professional baseball player.
It really does. It really does.
Now batting. Brad Renfro.
Guy died at like 20 or something. Right. Anyway, whatever. Here's a phallus comment.
This is the original icon for male. It's a rudimentary phallus.
There you go. All right.
No, it's a freaking triangle.
Yeah. And she goes, well, that's to the point.
You're so funny. And then Gandalf makes everything better.
Yes, the more penises you have, the higher your rank, boys will be boys.
Yeah, you know how it goes. It is time for hobbits to be true.
I tend to disagree. I think one penis is the right number to have. I don't know.
The more penises you have, the more you're afraid of zippered pants.
Yes.
Not for us to decide what we...
Now, how's the line go where he says to Frodo in the cave? It's pretty good. I can't think of it, though.
It's not for us to do with the time we have. You ever lose your car keys?
That's not it.
Completely different guy.
All right, final quote. This is a French guy saying, my nose. And I know this because I read the subtitles, and it's great. So here's a French guy saying, my nose.
Wow.
Yeah, the subtitles during that scene when Jean Reno is kicking the crap out of this guy were laughable, and I think it's just because of the guy's acting, like, ow, you have kicked me upon my nose.
My nose. Yeah.
Right. It always knows.
Why they didn't stop the plane from leaving, if that was the thing. The air traffic controllers totally didn't want to work with the French police.
No, they're terrible. There's no question about it. They were bad. All right, what are we doing here? I know what time it is. Check this out. I have right here the Film Sack checklist. Afraid of elevators, but not speeding cars in reverse down narrow Paris streets. Check.
A tiny smart car.
Yeah,
no less.
Little wiener car. Mm-hmm. Totally. When in doubt, whip yourself. Check. And finally, worst hitman double crosser gets distracted by a dove in a chapel. Check. All right. Let's do some Star Trek connections. There's only one that we know of. This is from Daryl the Trek Nerd. Says Akiva Goldsman wrote the screenplay, or part was one of the writers on the screenplay, but in played a Vulcan council member in 2009 Star Trek. In the sequel, Star Trek Into Darkness, he appeared as a Starfleet admiral. He won an Academy Award for writing the screenplay of the 2001 film A Beautiful Mind. Goldsman was once rumored to be starring or writing a Star Trek film in 2000, but this was revealed to be false. So that's a good one, interesting one, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if he wrote all the parts where they did the anagrams.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Mm. They're all Klingon symbols, for all we know.
It's a very and a Beautiful Mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very Eurocentric cast, with the exception of Tom Hanks. He's like the one that you think might have a house in Hollywood. Everybody else lives in Europe, and we've learned doing these Star Trek connections every week that you kind of have to be West Coast American to have a shot at having been on Star Trek.
Yeah, I think you're right, and also you're also right about him. I'm just trying to think. There's no other American actors, right? That's it. Like, he's it. I think everyone else is not from there.
It's too bad Paul Bettany never got into like a Star Trek movie. Like he would have been good in like Nemesis or what was the one with the aliens with the skin peeling off of them?
That was Refulgence. Hold on. Star Trek
Insurgents. Insurrection.
It's not even close to what we thought. Yes, Insurrection.
I want Paul Bettany at everything, I guess.
Yeah, I do too. He's great. There's nothing wrong with Jarvis. He's the man. Yeah. I guess he's the Vision now, so
he's
sorry,
Jarvis.
He's kooky
in interviews, though, but...
Yeah. Yeah, he's a little wacko. Good actor, though. Soundtrack great. I give it a PG for pretty great in the end. I actually kind of liked it, especially the finale part had some pretty sweeping stuff. I think it was good. Mm-hmm. Maybe during the bulk of it, I didn't really stand out to me, but at the end, I thought it was pretty good.
Never seen this movie, never heard this movie, and I want the soundtrack. I thought the score was that good.
Yeah, it was strong. Mm-hmm. Who wrote it? Do we know? We don't know.
Oh, yes,
I'm sure we could find out.
Yeah. Hold on. I've got it right here.
James Foley. Ricardo Flasselbender.
What are you doing right now? It's Hans Zimmer.
Oh, Hans Zimmer. Oh.
It's Hans Zimmer?
Oh, I love Hans Zimmer. What? That's why I liked it.
Flasselbender.
Yeah, Flasselbender. Yes. He's going to be great in that Assassin's Creed movie.
I've learned that I can pick out Zimmer unless he was doing something he was told to do different, and then he was clearly told this needs to have a certain sound, and he nails it, and it didn't feel like Hunt for Red October to me, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, he is Hans Zimmer. Yeah, he is great. Let's do a Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
The Da Vinci Code. Ron Howard was mostly present for the making of this morose misdeed of a movie that maligned Christianity with all the moxie of a malevolent mess, man.
I like that. Brian Dunaway.
The Da Vinci Code. Nacho Dice Diet 5. Dance Jet Video. Teach Cod Divine. And finally, Dead Chive Tonic. I learned nothing.
A Dead Chive Tonic. Nice.
That's pretty good. That reminds me of that, what was Selena? Selena, Utah, or whatever it was, Brian?
Right.
Something Squib.
Oh, St. Squib.
Oh, St. Squib, yeah. Still my favorite thing ever. All right. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
All right. So back in 2006, Google had a contest, online contest, in coordination with the Da Vinci Code, where they actually had cryptic puzzles, searches, mini games and stuff on their website. And for the first 10,000 people that solved it, they actually got a cryptex, an actual half pound cryptex, which I'm holding in my hand.
That's me like, no way. Yeah, you were one of them?
For real.
You're such a nerd.
That's me hitting on the table. This thing is heavy, like bronzy metal. And for my Twitter post this week, I'm only going to use 5 characters, and I have actually done a photo that you can see on my Twitter. Actual Twitter post. I'm breaking the fourth wall here with our Twitter post.
Look at that. You have one of these.
I have one of these.
Is there vinegar in there that's going to jack everything up if you break it?
No. And it contained a little thing that said, congratulations, you have proven yourself worthy of the of Da Vinci's blah, blah, blah. I don't still have the little scroll that came in there. But so my Twitter post are those 5 letters that I put on the cryptex.
It says shite.
Yeah, it does.
That's amazing.
It's the only five-letter word I could think of.
That is incredible, awesome. Dude. You made my day with this. This is also our post on the blog's photo. This is absolutely amazing.
That is so great.
Also,
dude,
you should have spelled Maird. That would have been funny.
Yeah, if only you could have.
Yeah.
If only M-E-R-D-E, right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you could have.
Yeah, that's super cool.
That would
have
been more appropriate. Damn it.
Imagine if that was a really big movie that just is a classic for the ages, how cool it would be that you have that.
Yeah, well, instead, it's still a really, really cool
thing. It's still pretty neat, yeah. But it would be so much cooler, I think.
I love how Scott keeps throwing in, imagine if this was a good movie. Just imagine it.
Just pretend for a minute that we're in an opposite world, and this is a good movie. All right, we're doing the... Ooh, look at this. You can't even tell this is a candy bar wrapper. I'm about to read the alternate titles. It almost was called I Don't Remember Jarvis Being So White, or Gandalf in a Trunk. And that's your alternate things. Here's the best thing about today's selection and emails, because I got two emails to read. One of them is from somebody whose name is literally Dan Brown. It's the only reason I took the email. It's got nothing to do with today's movie or anything. It's just the guy's name is Dan Brown. It's in his email address and his signature. And I think it's rad that we're going to read it. So we'll get to that in a second. First, WLG writes in and says, I love the episode on The Phantom. I have a personal connection to the movie. Growing up, my family were friends with the Zanes. Billy Zane was more than 10 years older than me, but when we knew the family, he was just starting out in Hollywood. He was, to us, an extremely cool guy we looked up to. The Batman films were in full swing when he landed this role, and everyone in Hollywood was assuring Billy that this was the role that was going to make him huge. He kept telling us that The Phantom was better than Batman, so we were very excited to see the movie. Of course, it wasn't good and certainly not better than Batman. We lied our faces off to Billy Zane, though, since we did not have the heart to tell him, that his big role was crap. We left the rest of the world to tell him that instead. Thanks, WLG. That's amazing. That's a great story.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, thanks to everybody.
I bet you Zane probably did think it was the best because, I mean, really, he really filled out that costume. And in Batman, they were kind of cheating it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't about the costume and looking good.
But not only that, like when you're in the middle of making it, sometimes you're having the time of your life. And then the final edit just is shit and there's nothing you could have done about it. Like, you know, everybody talks about how excited The Rock is about his new movie with Shorty there. What's his name? Yeah. Get his name.
Shorty.
Who's the Shorty?
You mean the other half of your top
Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart. Yeah. That he's so excited and loved making it, but the critics freaking hate that thing. So, you know, Duncan Jones loved making Warcraft, but the critics hate it and players love it. Like, this is just the way of things. But I think The Phantom is kind of more objectively bad. Anyway, good job, Zane. You went on to do some other stuff, and that's fine.
Good job, friend of Zane, lying to your friend.
Yeah, and now putting yourself out there so that it's on the internet forever, and he could hear it one day by accident. Dear FilmSack, says Dan Brown, renowned author of The Da Vinci Code and Demons and Monkeys, or whatever it was called.
Yes.
My New Year's resolution for 2016 was to listen to more podcasts. I'm an aspiring filmmaker. That's kind of funny. So it was to great delight that I stumbled upon your podcast. You make me laugh so much while I drove my day job to the theme park industry, which mostly takes away from my good mood. That is until I can laugh again on the way back home. Thank you for that. I know you get a lot, but I don't want to make a request, or I do want to make a request. Is there a way that you can do an episode about the Garbage Pail Kids? I thought of Dunaway
I would love to do that.
It was so badly written and acted, but it's equally fantastic to watch the nightmarish costumes. To me, it has FilmSack written all over it. Keep up the good work. Dan Brown, renowned author of The Da Vinci Code.
Right.
And of the upcoming Paramount Pictures film
Inferno. That's right.
I love the idea that Dan Brown, renowned author of Da Vinci Code, is working at Disneyland as one of the three musketeers.
Right.
He's one of those particular mice characters.
Or I'm Goofy or whatever. I love it. Yeah. You're the man, and yes, if Garbage Pail Kids hits streaming somewhere.
It was streaming at one point in time, I believe.
It was real short, though, I remember.
Yeah,
it was like
a short period of time.
Yeah.
By the way,
I caught most of it.
Yeah.
It was good.
If your job at a freaking amusement park is depressing, what is going on? Like, the rest of us should just kill ourselves.
Well, that should be the happiest place on earth to work, right? Yeah.
You'd think, but every time you think that, it always turns out somebody's got info that would make you go, oh, it's like that. Like, I'm sure that every dream job ever has some... There's always some downside. Grass is always greener. Applies. Like, seriously, if you're in a goofy suit all day, That sounds like shit. That sounds like a
terrible
time.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're doing the, even doing the Jungle Cruise ride and having to say those jokes over and over again, I still think that a bad day doing that probably beats a good day being a high school guidance counselor.
Oh, oh my gosh. Yes. You just came up with one of the worst jobs imaginable.
I don't know. I mean, those
guys. And I apologize to any high school guidance counselors.
No,
out
don't
there
apologize. If you have to work with teenage boys, it's gotta be the worst thing in the world.
Right.
I don't know. If you've got real passion for helping them and help getting them on the right track. I mean, there's, you know, I could see that being rewarding. I had a great guidance counselor growing up, and he seemed to love his job. So I don't know that it's a you can blanket that whole thing. However,
he drank a fifth of scotch every night. Every night.
See, that would be one of those things. I would love to have a TV show where I had, like, got to do a job for a day, and do the Jungle Cruise ride and do a be a guidance counselor. I mean, I think I'd really screw some kids up in both places probably, but but it'd be a fun. It'd be a great TV show. Like, I'm going to do this for one day and then tell you what it's all about.
Something like Dirty Jobs, but not dirty.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I don't want to clean squid guts for
a day. I don't think one day gives you a really good example of what a job is like.
I think you should call it take this job and shove it and then do all the jobs that no one wants to do.
Yeah.
But aren't dirty.
Especially ones where you have to shove things.
Right.
Like, all right. Whatever that is. I don't know what that is. Stuffing turkeys. What's a job where you shove things? I can't think of anything.
But football. Like, imagine if your job is plucking turkeys. Ugh. Wow, that's a horrible job.
It is. And those things will shit all over you, even when they're dead. next movie is E.T. the Extraterrestrial, the extra one.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
I'm pretty excited about this.
My childhood.
I know.
Right. I think people get worried about that, but just remember, on FilmSac, we do movies that bring us joy, whether it be because we think a movie didn't hold up. We gotta watch it before we remember, right?
I'm certain it's gonna hold up because I can't not like E.T. Even when they replace guns with walkie talkies, I still love this story. I love what it meant to me when I was 9 or whatever I was when it was my birthday movie. Like, there's too much about E.T. that I love. Peter Coyote with his keys.
Mm-hmm.
And
because I have a 6-year-old, I'm probably going to see the movie like 5 times in the next week.
That's awesome. That's more than your 3. Yeah, it's more than your 3. There's also a point where one of the brothers calls the other kid penis breath. And I remember that was a shocking thing when I was a kid. And all my people were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he's that penis breath.
I'm buying me some Reese pieces before you even start.
Yeah.
Eat Reese pieces and watch this movie.
Yeah.
Nice.
You call them Reese pieces. We call them Reese's pieces. And that's Reese fine. Pieces. It's okay. We're all on this earth together.
Reese pieces.
Because my kid had never seen Beauty and the Beast, I acquired it and put it on. And then we saw Beauty and the Beast together, he and I, like 3 times.
The cartoon? The Disney?
Yeah, the Disney film. Okay. And it's a really good movie.
Not the Ron Perlman series.
TV series with, right.
That's right. I watched the gritty New York. Anyway,
right.
One of the rare movies I've ever seen where watching it 3 days in a row, I did not hate it. I did not
feel
horrible. It's a great movie. Yeah, it's a real good day. I mean, listen, that's Disney at their hand animated best, man.
And I don't want to say it's just Disney, by the way. The Kung Fu Panda, I saw 3 days in a row.
Great
and
movie.
Also enjoyed every time.
Great movie. Yeah. Nothing wrong with those panda movies. What's another
one coming out, right?
Yeah, there's. I mean, once in a while you just run into one where you're just like, man, this is good every time, all the time, multiple times. And then sometimes you'll see a thing like, oh, here's an example. I'm sure maybe one day I'll go back and revisit it. But I have no reason to go back and watch Breaking Bad ever again. I loved Breaking Bad. One of the greatest shows ever. I looked forward to that every week and I couldn't not get enough of it. But it's the kind of thing that once you've consumed it, I don't feel like there's motivation to go do it again.
I didn't go back and I watched it and really enjoyed watching it a second time.
Breaking Bad is like orthodontics. You got to get through it, but you don't ever want to do it again. You have the results now. You don't need to ever have braces again. Don't do that.
And it was an incredible experience, and my gosh, what a great thing. But I don't know. I just don't feel like I could. Ibbot's got a broader mind with the sort of stuff I've noticed. And it's just good. I wish I could do that more, but... Like, it's not like I could watch the same Seinfeld episode 50 times or a Futurama season 100 times in a row and never get bored of it. Like, infinitely rewatchable. I just can't see myself doing that with like Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul or Brian, lost
Ibbett,
even.
Are you like a self-flagellating monk and you watch Breaking Bad?
Hold on, let me adjust my sillies that's on my leg. Oh,
move that around. Move it closer to your
testicles.
Watch
Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Seriously, rewatching Breaking Bad just sounds to me like a recipe for having bad dreams for a month.
Yeah, awesome. I don't know about that so much as it just, I feel like since I know everything, it just, I don't know, the impact isn't there. But then again, you know, I don't know. I say all this, but I'll bet you I revisit it one day. I'll bet I go back.
I bet if you went back and just watched the first episode of Breaking Bad again, you're like, yep, I'm in. Got to watch the whole series all over again.
All right. Well, E.T., we'll see if E.T. has that same kind of rewatchability for all of us. That's next week. Spielberg's epic E.T., the extraterrestrial. There's two of them. There's just an extra one. What else? Then there's Darkman, Sahara, and a bunch of rad stuff after that. So looking forward to all this. The 2005 Fantastic Four is coming up. The Mummy, TMNT3. Yeah. Oh, boy.
That's going to be great.
I snuck a peek the other day just to see, and oh, man.
Yeah. Was it a 5-minute peek or did you watch the whole thing?
No, it was like a 5-minute peek, literally, okay. Just to see. I was like, okay, is this going to... Because I have a lot of good fond memories of the original. But man, yeah. By the time you get to the third, you think that the technology is going to improve and their faces are going to, you know, their mouths are going to move a lot better. The first one, you kind of give it a little bit of a pass. It's like, well, this is the first time they try with these large, you know, turtles. But then in the third one, you're kind of expecting like this improvement and there's none.
There's none. It feels like a step back in a lot of ways.
It's weird. And lots of, you know, because you expect the mouths to be moving and they're not really moving.
You know what's exciting is 300, episode 300 is going to be 300. We're doing.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That's yeah. Perfect. We're doing 300 exciting. On 300. How
and we're kicking rad is that? And we're kicking Ibbett right into the giant pit.
I can't wait.
That's madness.
The reason to do 300 for that episode is the freaking quotes that Scott's going to pull.
Oh yeah.
All right. That yeah. Movie.
Plus well done, Brian. Madness. Mm. That's he totally killed it. That was great. You had me at madness. all right, so there you go. That's what we got planned. That's what we're going to do. We're very excited about it. In the meantime, go to filmsack.com. Rate us wherever you get your iTunes, or your iTunes, wherever you get your podcast, where that may be iTunes. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Leave us a review there. We're on Twitter. We're at filmsack. Filmsack@gmail.com is our email address. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail to be played on the show, we take those as well. 801-471-0462.
But,
do it.
Yes. But you have to be a famous author to get through.
Got to be Dan Brown or
Stephen King.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Robert Ludlum.
Write us.
Who else?
We'd even take in a letter from Anne Grafton.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Christy Golden.
L is for letter.
Dennis.
Or Sue Grafton.
Dennis
Sue
Haysbert. Grafton. Who's Dennis Haysbert?
He's President Palmer and the Allstate guy.
You know, famed author. Dennis Haysbert.
Yeah. he wrote my nationwide insurance policy.
Oh, did he? Good. That's fantabulous. All right. I think it's going to do it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Merde.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Some days all three of us say the same thing at the end of the show. Some days two of us are just checked out already.